It is July 1988. Coming to America tops the box office. Michael Jackson makes history with Dirty Diana, the fifth number one single from Bad. NBC rules the summer rerun ratings race. And Tom Cruise's big cocktail teeth are all over the cover of Premiere. But you don't care too much about all that because you're still at the mall shopping with Sam. What to buy? What to buy? Maybe pants? Maybe shirts? Maybe a hat? Or maybe an Orange Julius? Those are all the things you can buy at a mall. You decide on $45 worth of Orange Juliuses. It's your life and your money, after all. Soon, the crushing weight of career and family will keep you in check, so why not $45 worth of Orange Juliuses? Why not indeed? But how to pass the time while you're sipping on that sweet melted creamsicle drink? Looks like it's time to open the latest issue and see what movies, music, and celebrities are worth getting into. Yes, it's time to...
Listen to Sassy!
And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Pamela Ribbon.
Diana.
That's how I thought. Perhaps that's how you did it in Canada.
No.
And then big drama during big cocktail.
I know how to sell things.
Amazing.
Dave says orange.
Well, Pam, before you send off your next script out to the, script people. All right, point taken. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing.
I didn't go to 6 years of doctor school to be called Mrs. Script People.
Doctor, this patient is doing incredibly poorly. Get the kind of medicine that will cure him, but not the kind of medicine that will kill him.
Well, I'm the only one that has anything to say about July 1988 in our pop culture lives, which is I was still on tour with a band. And on the band bus, a new, very thrilling development around this time was that they would have a TV and a VCR. So if you had tapes, you could bring them, and the band parents, which was what the chaperones were called, would let you watch them on the bus. And I'm sure that I brought my VHS tape of all the movies that I was able to tape off a free weekend of Super Channel. That's what HBO was called in Canada at the time, or Canada's equivalent, which included Crazy Moon with Kiefer Sutherland. Pam, have you ever seen this, where he falls in love with a deaf girl?
No.
She's wacky. She's like a manic pixie dream girl. That, Witches of Eastwick, Puke and Cherries. She's Having a Baby, previously reviewed in this magazine. Summer School, Courtney Thorne Smith in love with her teacher, not appropriate. And Some Kind of Wonderful, a classic we cannot impugn in any way. And No Way Out, which Dave and I watched last week. And I had forgotten until I watched it this time, which is probably the first time in like 30 years. That movie's pretty good. It really holds up. Dave, what did you think of No Way Out?
Which one is No Way Out?
It's the one where Kevin Costner. Oops.
Why?
I'm going to bleep that out. It's going to be hilarious.
In No Way Out, Kevin Costner is a Navy guy.
I mean, except for Pam, who just got totally spoiled.
That's all right. It's the kind of ending that lets me know I didn't need to see the beginning or the middle.
Right. Kevin Costner is a Navy guy. He meets Sean Young at some kind of thing in Washington. And it turns out she's having an affair with the defense secretary, played by Gene Hackman. Mm-hmm. And stuff happens to her, and then there's like a big cover-up about it. Dave seems to have not cared for it as much as I did.
It's all right.
I was watching White Nights over and over and over and over and over. Yes. Sweet, sweet rubles. Like, I think I know a lot of it. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I wonder if I can still do many of the dances in a impressive Isabella Rossellini impression. I watched it a lot. Mm-hmm. What do you mean we're landing in Russia? Just things like live in my brain. That's one of them.
I definitely had the soundtrack on cassette.
Well, since me and Tara do live separate lives, I will just tell you very briefly that this was the month that Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out. Oh boy, I love that movie when that came out. And a weird thing is though, they kept on saying like, well, maybe we'll do a sequel. But then like after they made it, a sequel became prohibitively expensive. Like, they forgot how to do it, and the only way they can do it was, like, with gold leaf or something like that. And only now do they have the technology where apparently they could actually possibly do a sequel, although, like, everybody's dead now, so.
Right. But is it, this is, I'm sorry, Dr. Script Doctor has a question. Is mm-hmm. is there, is it also an IP issue that it would just be cost prohibitive to get everybody in one movie like that?
Disney owns everything now, so all Disney just has to sign off on it, and away we go.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Disney bought this podcast.
Oh, shit. I mean, yeah.
We've been canceled.
Did we get points? Is that right? Points? Canceled. Is that how you do it, Pam?
No, sir. Oh. No, we got nothing. Darn. That's it. They bought us, and then they put us on a shelf.
We're going to be a Disney minus.
Lee, should we get into what now?
Yes.
What now? Put it all over my pop die. So some pop culture here. We're talking about comic books, because Sassy is cool from the jump. You want to interview me for a magazine? Said one rad skateboard dude named Dalton. No relation, right, to Skeevy Dalton.
Correct.
On, but, or yeah, who knows?
We don't know. There's no photo.
No, she says in what he said, not the same Dalton from What Now. She specifically calls it out.
Sounds like a cover-up. Dalton's busy visiting his girlfriend in Switzerland. Yeah, making love on the Alps.
Making love on the Alps.
Talk about peak performance.
Oh, boy, it's amazing. Okay, so here's his list of which, his list, notably, of which comic books are hippest. Batman the Killing Joke is a glossy satire of the original Batman the Uncanny. Oh, the original Batman. See, this is what happened. In here, I was like, the Killing Joke is not Australian. But what happened is this font, I'm just going to Dave it for a second, is confusing. This sentence is confusing because of the italics and the skinny. But this sentence is not two set. This is two sentences, not one
but
sentence.
But you also
and
said
I only
Batman,
read it
the,
as
Batman the Uncanny, which is combining two different things. But I would like
that's
to see something called
said.
Wait. I would like to see something called Batman the Uncanny. And basically, it's just yes. Batman doing impressions of other characters really well. And everybody's like, wow, that's uncanny. Look at him. He's doing Wolverine. He's coming. It's Bruce Wayne. Okay. And he's saying Snick Snick.
Yes, it makes people just freeze in their tracks. Yeah. It's uncanny. And then he cuffs them. But that's what it looks like. It's a satire of Batman the Uncanny. And then it says X-Men is like a staple for comic store rats. So cool, an Australian band took the name. So there's an Australian band called the Uncanny X-Men?
Yes, it's just Uncanny X-Men. I looked it up.
Here's something you should know. Any comic book that involves a team of people is exhausting and not worth your time. If there's wow. if your comic book could also be a soccer team, skip it.
It's a real no middle ground take from David T. Cole.
I'm just saying, like X-Men, the Justice League, the Avengers. Like anytime you have a billion heroes together, it's like only eating samples. It's like a tapas bar for comics. It's just like, well, I just really like that one thing. I didn't like all the other things. Mm-hmm. I wish I could just eat a whole plate of Wolverine.
It's really tough to, I mean, but these things have been around 50 years or whatever, some of them, right? So how are you going to do just one, even?
Just split them up. Just read the Wolverines and just read the Batman, but don't read Justice League and the X-Men. That's all I'm saying.
Separate lives.
I mean, we can't even Starlog it, you guys, because it's right here in the Sassy. But then it says anything Japanese, especially Lone Wolf and Cub, is being, quote, done up solid, according to Dalton. Elf Quest, which sounds like something Dave is trying to convince me is real. And Lovin' Rockets. And then says must be a trend here, but a band stole this name, too. And I would say an homage is not necessarily stealing. That's right. My little thing. Like, it's not stealing.
Yeah, Elf Quest doesn't sound real.
Elf Quest doesn't
sound
real.
But there was a magazine at the time called Dragon, which every time I saw it, I thought, that's not real. That's like a sample magazine for a background shot of a newsstand at a movie. But it was like a movie. I think it was a Dungeons and Dragons fantasy and sandals swords sort of magazine at the time. Mm-hmm. But every time I saw it, like, nah, that's not real. That's a plant.
Christina finishes by plugging Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I feel like that has stood the test of time as well. That's the one to watch.
Donatello, what to watch?
Take that.
Donatello also ended up. Maybe I won't censor that one, and then people put it together like, ah, I thought I was free of the No Way Out spoilers, and then Dave came back and he did it. Now I'm sad.
Yeah.
Dragon was one of the two official magazines source material for the Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game and associated products from TSR Incorporated, originally launched 1976. Starlight Jam.
We also get Gibson Grammar 101, where the liner notes from Debbie Gibson's latest album gets copy edited in a very aggressive red pen, even. And to be fair, Debbie's parents, who wrote this note from the liner notes, should know it's not you heart and you eyes. It's your heart and your eyes. But given that they spelled Kiefer wrong several times in just the last issue, like, take it easy, guys. Nobody's nerfed.
Okay, but also, I will say that this is primary source material. This is a document of record. This is a letter from Debbie Gibson's parents to Debbie Gibson. So it's a historical document in a way, and you really shouldn't be proofreading it.
Right. Since we're here, we couldn't help but notice is also incorrect. It's either we couldn't help noticing or we couldn't but notice. That's one a lot of people get wrong.
Also, I'm going to say, though, by publishing this little bit of What Now, they are inviting the worst type of letter, which is one we got at Television Pity.
Right.
I'm going to say often, which is, you dolts, you put the number 2 instead of putting T-O-O once in a recap from 3 years ago. Please hire me as your proofreader.
Like, yeah.
Way to sell yourself, buddy. Mm-hmm. Dear assholes, give me money. Signed me.
Yeah, I probably edited 70 pages of copy that day. Like, give me a break. Again, Pobody's nerfic. Moving on. Dirty Dancing 2 is supposed to come out next year, but don't get too psyched yet. Neither Patrick Swayze nor Jennifer Grey has said whether they'll be in it. Well, next year ended up being 2004, but Patrick Swayze was in Dirty Dancing Havana Nights, which you can watch on HBO Max. We will link it in the show notes. And I've seen this movie. I saw it in the theater. It's supposed to take place before the events of Dirty Dancing. So it's kind of weird that Johnny Castle looks almost 20 years older than when we saw him in Dirty Dancing.
They didn't use the de-aging technology of the time. Lots of Vaseline and soft light.
No, they just shot him from like far away.
You know what? I kind of respect that. It's just like, guys, look, we want to do this. It's too late to really sell you on it. So let's just agree that you have to pretend Patrick Swayze is young. Go.
Yeah. It's a fantasy.
So is this movie's a prequel?
It takes place during the revolution, around the time of the revolution in Cuba.
Could they have actually written something that happened after Dirty Dancing? Was there like a definitive ending to Dirty Dancing, like the town blows up and everybody's dead or something?
No.
Well.
Turns out Patrick Swayze.
No, they could. I'm sure whatever the sequel was supposed to be was like, you know, baby comes back from college or whatever.
This is our first Patreon release. If you want the uncut version of this episode, you must subscribe to Patreon to find out what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, you'll get one word emailed to you and you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what I thought it was.
That was not worth $5.
No, I don't know. Sometimes it is worth $5 to be like, I'm fucking good at this. And then we have this little tiny thing about Keanu Reeves where they're trying to make Groovox happen, which isn't working. But it says that Keanu's name means cool breeze in Hawaiian, which I have always heard it was cool breeze through the mountains.
So have I.
So, I don't know. But I was like, is that what Reeves means? Is Reeves the mountain? Yeah, he was, Superman was
Mahalo.
Christopher through the mountains. Yeah, I don't know. But also, did you know Keanu was born in Beirut and lived in Australia before his family settled in Toronto?
We claim him.
I did, because that was a lightning round question on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show.
Spoiler on an answer. What, did you go by his host?
I thought it was Winnipeg, not Toronto.
I think people think Winnipeg because he did Hamlet in Winnipeg famously. Like, after he was already famous, he went back and did it on the stage. But yeah, he was from Toronto.
But I have have met Keanu because he came to the roller derby and I was working door. I'm just going to tell you. I know you want the story, so I'm going to tell it to you. I was working door, so I was checking people in. And they're on a list and you check their name on the list and then you look at their thing and then you print the thing and then you give them a wristband and you give them a flyer and you talk about, you know, where the restrooms are and stuff, whatever. And I had my head down and I was like, how many? And he said two for Keanu Reeves. And I laughed as I looked up until I was staring at Keanu Reeves. And then I was like, just one moment. And then I looked down and there was his name in the computer under Keanu Reeves because he's cool like that. And then I was like, I have to put your wristband on if you could give me your hand. And I'm sure I made some sort of like, don't want to get you stuck in the hair. I don't remember none of it. I blacked out. And then I took his little ticket that he had given me that had his name on it and I kept it close to my heart. Oh. And then later during halftime, ended up talking to him for a little bit and then he took a picture with everybody because he's awesome, because Keanu is awesome. And I linked it in the show notes and you can see Keanu was super into roller derby.
I thought that was going to be, I can't find your name. And he puts his hand on the page, scrolls his finger down and taps it and you look at it and it says Mr. Mountain. And then he nods at you.
Do you know how hard it was not to say to him, do you know that your name means cool breeze through the mountains? I know that too. Do you know that I had your sassy poster? It's all purple in the back and you're sitting on a stool and you're adorable. It's awful. Anyway.
The non-pop culture items from What Now? Sassy glossary definition number 4, Groovox. Mm-mm. Basically a totally 90s version of groovy. Used when you tire of referring to movies, albums, and or clothes as cool. Yeah, cool is really retired from slang. Like this, that Groovox bathing suit on page 33 is to die for. Or Alan Boyce was so amazingly Groovox and permanent record, I must have him. Did not take off, should never have been attempted. This is so dumb.
But to me, Groovox sounds like a very lazy future signifier in some bad sci-fi show. Sort of like, you know, we don't say fuck, we say frack. We don't say, you know, or frell or whatever. Every, like, lazy show like that has one of those. No, in the year 2003, we don't say that. We say Groovox. Groovox, fellow traveler. That is what this word sounds like to me. Sarah, yeah. Like, yeah.
I bought a Groovox off of Goop. And what you mostly have to be careful is with celeries, it does get some of the fibers stuck. But I use my Groovox, I've got to say, like 7 or 8 times a day at this point. And I just feel like the brain fog is lifted and you can put the Groovox in more than one place. Like, I know what it says on the directions, but off label, your Groovox is like intense. It can be intense. Yeah. Stonewashed denim. Look, stonewashed denim is a thing that I had to live in, and probably you did too, because at one point you had no other options. They just stonewashed everything. And then there was acid washed, which is not exactly, it's kind of the same thing. And then it was just like bleached pants, and then we got holes in them, and now we're back around again. You can buy yourself like $1,300 stonewashed denim right now. So even if it was out by sassy standards in July of 88, hang on to it. Put it in your closet. Everything comes back.
Which one is the splotchy one? Is that acid? Which is the one that's sort of like very uneven?
Acid wash.
Yeah, it's acid or bleached. Yeah.
Okay. Those were hideous.
I learned a lot about stonewashed denim. Did you know it was all with pumice?
Yeah.
And then there was like a pumice problem. And
I thought you said hummus. A taste of the Mediterranean in your pants.
So when I read this, I was like, they mean acid washed. Like, to my memory of stonewashed is it just looked like worn. That was just what you did to make it look old. It wasn't like splotchy. Mm-hmm. And acid wash was the one that was way more trendy.
Yes, acid wash became very like glam band hair metal.
Yeah.
And stonewashed, I guess, is, yes, like more like a Western wear.
Right.
Out.
Yeah.
Before whiskering was a thing.
Right. But this was definitely a trend I never got on board with. I hated it, even before Sassy hated it. And I got for one Christmas, my mother thought she was doing something really nice and bought me an acid wash denim skirt. And I had to pretend I didn't hate it. But I did. Sorry, Mom, if you're listening to this, she's not. Yeah, just one of those trends where it's like I never got on board. Cold shoulder shirts, jeans tucked into high-heeled boots. I will never get on board with any of these. I'm just an abstainer. That's all.
You don't like a cold shoulder sweater?
No.
Oh, honey, it goes great with a baggy suit. But this, if you were into cold-shouldered sweaters, that would have been the thing to hide your acid-washed mini denim.
True.
And then it would just little peek at the bottom, and you would have been like, whatever.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be caught dead in that.
No. I had to wear it sometimes, like, for show, so she wouldn't feel bad. It's an early lesson in sparing people's feelings. Birthday. Karen, the baby of the sassy staff, has just turned 22. What if your first job when you were 21 years old was a fucking sassy? Like, how do you go on after that? Like, I can't contemplate what that must have been like.
You can't know.
Right.
You can't know. Like, you have no, it's just like people keep telling you, like, you can't know. Because I think about, you know, whenever you had a good job when you were younger and people would just be like, it'll never be like this again. You're like, oh, God, yeah. I'm so young. I hope that's not true. But I have to imagine she got said some of those kinds of things.
Imagining working at a place whose product you would admire and working at that place are two very different things.
I'm sure that's true.
Because like people like, years after Television of Pity folded, we'd be like, oh, Television of Pity, I bet that was really great. It's like, oh, my God, it was so stressful. Like, I'm so glad I don't do it anymore. Like, in retrospect, now that it's passed and the, you know, like, I'm glad it happened, blah, blah, blah. But if you said right now, do you want to do it all over again? It'd be like, you know what? I've already lost enough hair. My hair is gray enough. No, thank you. Like, I'm glad you liked it. You liked it more than I did in the end.
But that's probably a pretty good comparison of what I was trying to say. Like, I don't think at the time I could imagine that now, and it has happened like three or four times this year, that I'm just reading a book and all of a sudden the book is talking about Television Without Pity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's nuts to me. That yeah. I mean, the lasting of it, like mm-hmm. sassy, that people are just like, oh, wait a minute. I read those recaps.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. And there's a certain amount of pride into having made something that sort of endures in a little way. But then when I actually stop and think, what did I feel like when that was happening? What was I stressing about? The site almost went under three times. There was one moment where it was an hour from being shut down in what you would think of as the middle of its run. Like, it was really stressful and the product was good and people liked it. But like making it was a fucking nightmare. We're so young. We had no fucking idea what we're doing.
We didn't know.
Yeah. 22. Like Karen's age.
Yeah.
When mm-hmm. things were happening. Yes.
Happy birthday, Karen. It's time for another sassy factoid. This is about fireworks. And we all know fireworks started in China way back when, mixed a few things, kaboom. But I just wanted to bring this up because I love the casual wording. So this 10th century Chinese cook, you know, let's call him Han, and he mixed some stuff up and it exploded like all over the place. Just
yeah.
And it starts with an actually.
Actually, yeah.
It's like a total mistake. Yeah. But it's written in such a way that I thought it couldn't be any of it true. Like, doesn't it sound like a monologue from Schitt's Creek? Or like, David, who thought up fireworks? And David's like, actually, it was a total mistake. And they just whisper the whole cold open.
And saltpeter sounds like something made up for a Dungeons and Dragons manual.
Yep.
And then you have to dig up saltpeter to ward off the minions of Ragul.
Was saltpeter not a part of the urban culture, the urban legend culture of your junior high as it was at mine?
No, I don't know.
Oh, I know about it. Well, that they give it to boys so they're not so horny, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that you would hear it was in the water and that they were giving it to boys so that they'd stop being
gross. It's like
gross
the dick version of fluoride conspiracy?
Yes. But we also got fluoride at the same school, so they would tell you that the saltpeter was in the fluoride.
Fluoride is so you don't question the saltpeter.
That's right.
It makes you docile.
Did we talk about this? Did you have to have fluoride treatments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have to stand in line and do the monthly and swish in front of people and then
not
spit
monthly,
into things?
But no, we did do it. Did you get those things you put on your gums that turned your gums red where there was plaque?
Yeah.
Yeah, the chompy things. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I got a filling at school one time in elementary school.
What?
Yeah. There's like a dentist that would come in sometimes. And one day I came home and was like, he gave me a filling.
Oh, that wasn't a dentist, Tara.
That's not a dentist.
No. That was just
a filling.
That was just some creep from North Regina.
No. Will not stand for this Regina
slant. He's known as he's the Regina filler. The Regina hole filler.
Oh, boy.
Shame on both of you.
There is room zero chance that guy was a dentist, Tara. Oh, my God. This is terrible.
They had a dentist's office. They had a dentist chair.
In your school?
Yes.
They just would put you in a bus and send you to him?
No, it was in the school.
He had a portable dentist chair?
Is this a nightmare you had after watching the marathon, man?
No. This really happened.
Get a candy bar. This is crazy. Did anybody have to sign off on the thing that they did to your mouth?
I assume so, because I had a dentist also that was like not at the school.
Oh, he probably put some sort of transmission device in your teeth. He's probably listening in right now.
Hey, buddy.
88-year-old guy in North Regina. Hey, what's she doing now? I never lost track of my lovely.
Oh, Dave.
Gross.
Yuck.
I don't like it when she eats peanuts, but applesauce is okay because I can still hear everything. My name's Roy.
I have nothing to add to that.
Roy.
That is the most upsetting thing I've ever heard.
Roy, tonight when Dave sleeps, wake him up. Roy, just start playing music.
I'm not talking to you, Dave. I'm talking to Roy.
Yeah.
Just Born on the Bayou over and over again.
All right. You have another one here,
Oh,
Dave.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm still...
That was about fireworks.
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Is that a banana? Robert M. Moore, president of the International Banana Association, complaining to PBS for using a banana to demonstrate how condoms should be used during a recent program on AIDS. Our industry... Wait, what's the banana guy saw? Our industry finds excess usage of our product to be totally unacceptable. The choice of a banana rather than some other inanimate prop constitutes arbitrary and reckless disregard for the unsavory association that will be drawn by the public and the damn to our industry that will result therefrom. If the public is as literal as Mr. Moore, then we are all in trouble, says Sassy. I really like, in an entertainment kind of way, the extreme selfishness of Mr. Banana. Like, he's like, fuck you kids, yeah. Eat a banana, get AIDS. Mrs. Chiquita needs her hat money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that the correct reciprocal response would be to all this, eat a dick.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out karmically.
Yep.
Yeah, because you know what? Mr. Moore did not find it appealing.
Knock, knock, knock. Oh. Mrs. Scriptwriter, we need to take your license back.
Watch it.
Watch it.
What?
Watch it. That'll go on your
permanent record. Thanks, Dave. I do believe in a permanent record. And I also believe I watched this movie. And I will say the permanent record is not River's Edge. It's no River's Edge. And this thing is acting like this is the first thing Keanu's ever been in. And it's just not true. It's a 5-star review for permanent record. And we, Keanu, and it's so great. And it's more mentions of Alan Boyce than you'll ever hear for the rest of your life. And I was like, I guess. I mean, I remember Permanent Record.
Yeah, I saw it.
Sort of. Yeah. But if you haven't seen River's Edge, do yourself a favor. It's very good.
All right.
No? Do you not?
No, I agree.
I really thought that'd be a more controversial take.
No. I think that's reasonable. I think you're right. River's Edge is the one people remember more than Permanent Record, for sure. Catherine reviews Stormy Monday, a movie I've never heard of, but Sting is in. Review starts out, "Dear Sting, thank you for saving my face. You see, I happen to think you're a very perceptive and intelligent man, and I have this tendency to tell people that, so they act like I'm personally responsible for everything you do. And no offense, but I would like to banish myself of responsibility for Dune and the Bride." That's not a phrase. mean absolve yourself from responsibility or maybe disclaim responsibility. But then 3/4 of this review is about her. I'm not done. 3/4 of this review is just about Catherine and Sting, other than the last 4 lines, which are like, it's good. Like, he's good. Like, guys, learn to write a review. It's so annoying to me how little information is in these reviews. I know I shouldn't care, but I do.
I never even heard of Stormy Monday.
No, me neither. You,
yeah. I guess because people didn't go see it and they made fake reviews about it. They forgot to say what was in it because they didn't see it either.
Right. Also in it are Melanie Griffith, Tommy Lee Jones, and Sean Bean, who I assume dies because that's what he does.
I don't know how anybody could take Sting as an actor seriously after seeing him in Dune with his inflated water wing Speedo outfit. It is ridiculous. It is the funniest thing ever. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just search Sting Dune 1984.
Yeah.
And you're off to the races.
People have seen it. I see that on Twitter all the time.
You say that, but then once in a while, you're like, look at this. It's a picture of Sean Connery and Zardoz. You're like, what? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, true.
So, you know, it's the first time for everybody when it comes to Sting and his blue inflatable Speedo.
Starlog Jam.
Starlog Jam. With all the Dune stuff that was coming up this year with the new Dune, I thought, well, maybe I'll read Dune finally. Everybody thinks Dune is one of those things you got to read. It's sci-fi. That's Dune. It's boring.
You know, what's not dumb is Running on Empty, a film that little Pam thought was basically about her because she moved around a lot and was always started a new school and was like, when will this end? When will my parents, spoiler, abandon me and let me live my own goddamn life? Never is the answer. They just kept calling me a dependent and then using me on their tax forms. So if they were good hippie parents like Ripper Phoenix's in Running on Empty, I probably would have been free sooner. This movie is the best. That's how it begins. And it's also true. This movie is the best. Running on Empty will make me cry if I think about it more than 14 seconds in a row. And you can watch it. You should watch it if you haven't.
Yeah, it's on HBO Max. We'll link that in the show notes too.
Martha Plimpton, it's just great being Martha Plimpton in it. And you just want to be like, you are Martha Plimpton and you're River Phoenix. Oh, God, it's great. It's great. It's great. They didn't give it enough stars. That's what I wrote. Not enough stars because it only gave it 4 stars. That's the same as the Sting movie nobody knows.
They should have given it 0 stars and just let them
because it was
it
running
out.
On empty?
Empty in it? Yeah. It would have been one of those like, oh, is the review the art piece?
The next review is for Casual Sex. It's a 2-star review. And it says, add this one to your list of silly, silly, silly movies of the year. I assumed I hadn't seen it until I popped up the trailer and I was like, oh, I guess some version where I should not have seen it. I did see it because everything was very familiar, including all the Andrew Dice Clay like hip thrusting that was going on.
He's the love interest. Like, spoiler. Yeah. No, they end up together, him and Leah Thompson.
They do?
Yes. I will always remember the poster for this because it was in magazines for like months leading up to it. And both Leah Thompson and Victoria Jackson, speaking of terrible people, look so cute on this poster. We'll link that in the show notes too. But this is also where I first saw the like, hey, there's your boyfriend joke. I'd never seen it before this movie. I mean, we all do it now, but that was the first time.
How many movies do you think in the history of Hollywood end with a question mark?
Not many.
Can you measure that in the hundreds? Tens?
In the history of Hollywood.
Probably in the hundreds, tens. But that's not a lot.
Okay.
Why? Are there?
I don't know. I'm just curious. I'm going to see if I can do any research on it while you guys further talk about casual sex.
I think we're done with casual sex, but we can move on to Critters 2. Maybe the worst review the magazine has published to date. Here, I'll read it in its entirety. 1-star review. What a stupid movie. I'll go and see almost any movie, and I usually find something to like. But as soon as this one started, I knew I'd made a mistake. So the critters are loose in this town, and townspeople have to kill them. So that's what they do. Really, that's it. I would have had a more exciting night at home. Even if you're a movie maniac like me, skip this one. what makes this movie bad? Like, tell me some facts about it. Like, are you a person who likes monster movies or not? Like, is this normally the kind of thing you would like, but this didn't meet your expectations for reasons? What are the reasons? I mean, I know they have limited space, but Jesus Christ, don't let Neil write reviews anymore either.
Whatever happened to Baby Jane? What's up, Doc? What about Bob? Shall we dance? They call me Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
And others.
Dave, did you see that the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the director ditched the question mark because there's a superstition in Hollywood that if you put a question mark at the end of your title, the movie will bomb at the box office.
Oh.
Dude, where's my car?
Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Oh, brother, where art thou?
They shoot horses, don't they?
Did you hear about the Morgans?
Are you a sad boy who drinks a lot of beer? Then you're telling me about this song. You listen to Morrissey and your hair is growing quite long. I'll meet you in college. I'll meet you at the park. I'll meet you underneath your mattress pad because you sleep on the floor with three blankets and no more and a towel that was lent to you by Dad. Why is your life so sad and long and you wish to be wherever you are not? And here I am looking at you while you listen to Morrissey and tell me about the Smiths as if I didn't know they had anything to do with each other. And then you tell me about Love and Rockets and Bauhaus and Peter Murphy. That's my review of Morrissey.
It is a good album.
That was great.
Thanks. Oh, God. It's funny because I think if I had found Morrissey here when Sassy told me about it, mm-hmm. I would have been equally insufferable. But I just didn't pick up. It was not available in my neck of the woods. I really genuinely missed out on Morrissey during prime Morrissey time.
Yeah. Which we're not in anymore because he's, guess what? Also a
he's 2021. Yep.
And I'm a real piece of shit, everyone knows, but I did say that from the very beginning, kind of made it a whole thing about me. I'm a dick, and so's the boy telling you about this song. He's trying to tell you, when someone tells you who you are, believe them. It's Morrissey who wrote it, not Maya Angelou. Little known fact, have you heard of the Smiths?
This is where the montage really kicks into high gear and they start getting good at skiing, cross-country bike riding, dressing themselves.
Sewing their own dresses. Yes.
Exactly. I know how to thread a bobbin.
It's a backstitch. A stitch in time really does save nine. I'm going to go to prom after all. We're going to not review a couple of things in this month, including the Wild Swans. I don't know who they are. And Prince, kind of heard of him. And move on to Jenny Morris, Body and Soul. Jenny is from Australia because this month has been brought to you by Australia. Australia, a place that Sassy has heard of. Fun fact about Jenny Morris, she used to be roommates with Michael Hutchence. And I found on the internet the two of them doing a version of Jackson. And it's cute as hell. So we'll link that in the show notes. I couldn't get it and put it on the mix on the mix for this month because Spotify doesn't have it. So you got to go to the actual show notes. But I did also make you a mixtape. So if you're like, oh, I thought they'd talk about Prince, I put it on the mixtape for you. There you go.
All right. This is the montage when the computer nerds are creating their program to create the ultimate love bot. Let's give it three boobs.
They're borrowing a bra.
Oh, you put the vagina in the wrong place.
Yeah, there's the sister, the older sister's handing over a bra with a, I'd better get this back look.
This is Fur by Jane Weedlin, former Go-Go. The review by Karen sideswipes Belinda Carlisle's solo album as sicky, sweet, ultra-happy, innocent bop songs. Mad About You, still a good song. Heaven is a place on earth, still a good song. Let's put some respect on Belinda Carlisle's name. Anyway, she likes this one better because she thinks it's not as saccharine. And I listened to a little bit of it and, you know, sure, they sound kind of samey to me, but not in a bad way. This is just good pop songs. That's very specifically a makeover montage for a guy, that song.
I was going to say that is the music behind Eddie Murphy trying to figure out things at the beginning of Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay. Yeah.
That's also heist for like the mannequin department store where you're trying to steal more mannequins for mannequin. Yep.
This is, in fact, New Shoes. The album is called Told You So.
Can I get a spelling on that?
N-U space capital S. H-O-O-Z. Elizabeth writes this review, which is, except for Should I Say Yes, the songs on this album are uninspiring and boring, and the lead singer Val is yet another in the long line of fake Madonnas. The only time I would recommend buying this album is if you're having a party and need something to play around about 4:30 a.m. when you want everyone to go home. Why is this line lodged in my brain? As soon as I read it, it was like, oh, man, I remember this now. It's like, just Pam knows. Sometimes that happens when you're reading an article and it's like something just strikes you that for reasons that don't really make sense, really just struck you at the time.
Yeah, never leaves your brain. To which I would just say, New Shoes just made $6 while you read that sentence off of I Can't Wait. So, okay, Elizabeth. They're fine. They're doing fine. But what I appreciate about New Shoes is all of the songs on this album. You could just sing I Can't Wait over it. Mm-hmm. Baby. And it doesn't matter what they're singing. You're just like, I can't wait. This is a song, I Can't Wait, that when they tally up the songs you've heard in your life, when you, you know, when you get your stats, when it's over. Mm-hmm. My number one is Tainted Love. I've heard Tainted Love, I think, every day. And I Can't Wait is like in the top five, just like gas stations and airports.
Violent Femmes.
Mm-hmm. Blister in the Sun.
Blister in the Sun. There was like 15 years where I heard that every day. And I fucking hate that song because of it.
I don't know why you toured with the Violent Femmes then. It feels like... You knew what you were getting into when you were their webmaster.
Wait, hang on. I went on tour.
That was the Violent Femmes.
Wait, hang on. I went on tour with the Violent Femmes. Yeah. Like, let's just say even just a North American tour. It wasn't worldwide. And I had to move around with them as a webmaster. Yes.
No one else knew how to upload the photos from their concerts, Dave.
That's right. As someone who knows a lot about Weezer, I just want to say this is a thing.
One to watch this month is Chris Young. He's 17. He's from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, but he wants to move to Los Angeles. I mean, maybe he never did, and that's why he didn't take off. But
look, oh, hang on. Mm-hmm. We all know One to Watch is zero for whatever so far. I don't really care about you George Newberns out there. He is not a famous actor in the way that One to Watch wants us to think that this is, you know, we got the goods. Here's One to Watch. He's going to be a star. We haven't had one of those yet. Maybe one of the criteria is they've already fucking moved to Hollywood to start their career rather than maybe he'll get out of Podunk, Pennsylvania and do maybe some acting in the acting town.
He's 17. He's still got to finish high school.
So?
Whatever.
Is he serious about this or not?
He was in Max Headroom. Max Headroom was big.
boy, when the Max Headroom TV series started, I was so excited because I was like, this thing I've seen on, what did they do? What did he sold Coke or something?
Pepsi.
What did he use? Pepsi? I was like, holy shit, there's a computer guy and he's going to have a series. And then like you watch the series and like Max Headroom's in it for like 2 seconds and there's all this other stuff. Like, wow, that was disappointing. I remember the first time I was like, oh boy. Well, I better watch another one to make sure it's still as bad. And like, I watched the whole thing and they're all terrible and it didn't last. And I was so sad. Max Headroom. And it's this guy's fault. Thanks a lot, you dick, Chris Young.
So the peg for this item is that he's about to be in The Great Outdoors with John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. But the next thing it says is he's going to be in Jake's Journey, a weekly series planned for this September with Graham Chapman of Monty Python fame. He plays Jake, a guy who has a little trouble meeting girls. The premise of the show is like he and his family are American, but they move to England. And then through methods, he gets sent back to the Middle Ages and Graham Chapman played a knight. And this is like apparently one of the famous unjustly failed pilots. There's a Vulture article where it comes up. The cast is crazy. Rick Mayall from The Young Ones was also in it. But apparently what it was a casualty of like the network watching was like, this is too British, which like fair. But then also Graham Chapman got cancer and Hal Ashby, who directed the pilot, was also like not he was ailing. So they're also that both of those all of those things conspired to kill this thing, which actually sounded pretty good. The script for the pilot, which Graham Chapman wrote, is in one of his books. But there was also, Dave, a Starlog article about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't want to get all mustache oil on everybody, but one of the things I wish that would come back was people, instead of saying outdoors, the out of doors. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the out of doors.
I once saw an interview with Nick Offerman where he said that his wife, Megan Mullally, was not outdoorsy and prefers the in of doors, which I thought was very cute because relatable.
Gosh, I can't just break into song. I don't know what's happening. Glow me. For special occasions. Okay. Now it's time for feature number one. I Was a Dating Game Bachelorette, written by Christina Kelly, who writes an article so manic. That yeah. I was like, I don't like, it's so hard to root for her in this article because she's so angry and competitive. But I also understand, she flat out says at the beginning, I just want to win. I don't even give a shit. I just want to win. And so I'm going to just win. But it's going to be a problem because I'm not good at this because I shouldn't be here because I'm smart. And look at her with her answers that are sexy. Oh, crap. Why'd I tell him I was smart? I'm never going to win. Well, the sleazy girl's going to win. Ew, I don't even like how he sounds. I didn't win.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, there's a lot of girl-on-girl crime in this thing. She's pretty mean to
she's mean
other
to
people
everyone.
Who are, like, civilians. Yeah.
Yes, she's just mean to the guy, the anyone, you for reading it, honestly. Just, like, everybody gets a little bit of her. I mean, honestly, she's just disappointed in herself that there are some games she can't win.
Yeah.
And I feel for her. I understand that feeling.
Yep.
Doesn't help that the makeup person says, you look like nothing, which is.
Yeah. One of the first things I applied for out here when I moved out to L.A., on Sunset Strip, there was. Remember when they were the Absolute ad campaigns mm-hmm. where it was for Absolute Vodka?
Yeah.
So they were making one for the Sunset Strip with headshots, and they were going to put all your headshots up and make a Absolute bottle. And so we went and stood in line on the strip. Like, it's not like we went to anywhere. Anyway, went up to the table with my headshot, and she looked at my headshot, and she looked at me, and she went, your headshot doesn't really look like you, and your headshot should look like you because you've got a look right now that's, you know, kind of in the need. And I was like, really? And she goes, reality. And then handed it back to me.
Oh.
Reality.
Burn.
They're bringing the, I don't know what's happening. I'm just Jiminy Glickin' out here. Did you know they're bringing back
the dating game? It's the implication here.
It's the implication. situation here. There was Zoe Deschanel is going to be bringing back with Michael Bolton. It sounds like a Jiminy Glick article, but it's true. Zoe Deschanel and Michael Bolton are going to do this celebrity dating game, and this sentence is a real sentence. The celebrity identities will remain a mystery to their suitors, who are given clues via hilarious parody song performances by host Michael Bolton.
Wow.
Yeah, he really liked doing that Lonely Island video and just never stopped, which is fine.
Nico, the bachelor back here in 1988, then asked a question about what kind of games we'd like to play on dates. The redhead, Christina's nemesis here, makes up some complicated story about the masters of the universe being She-Ra and He-Man and conquering a mountain together. I'm pretty sure He-Man and She-Ra are like cousins or siblings or something. Don't do it. Your baby's going to have three eyes. Just want to bring that up, Starlight Jam.
Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, and Orko. Together, we defend Castle Grayskull from the evil forces of Skeletor.
Our second feature, continuing the pro-Australia propaganda campaign that is this issue slash this magazine.
Do your hair, Cynthia.
Thank you. It's titled, Australian Bands Are Cooler. The author is Christina. And we get to hear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We learn about six different Australian bands. So let's learn about the first one.
I'm only going to talk like this through the whole segment.
Good. Me too. Never heard of them.
It's not Macaroon Lady. It's just do it me. No words. Just do this.
She was only 16.
No. Out where the river broke.
The rain in Spain stays mainly on a plain. I think she's got it.
Perfect.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Our first and by far most famous band on this list is Midnight Oil. She talks about how they've written a lot of songs about racial problems in Australia, like the recent Bicentennial's disregard of the Aborigines. This is not what you say anymore. Say Aboriginal. It's very offensive. I don't know if it was at the time. Probably not.
Language morphs.
It does.
I don't think that was in poor taste at the time.
Probably not.
I mean, language morphs. I don't think that was in poor taste at the time.
I'm Susie. I'm a Pisces. And sometimes we sing with Midnight Oil.
Bop, bop, bop.
Each of these little breakdowns of the band has, like, their history, their music, their visuals, their name, their influences, etc. And so under their visuals, which is, like, what do they look like, basically, Christina writes, ideologically, Garrett might be the Bono of Australia, but he doesn't have the looks. Unless, of course, you like tall, thin, scary men who shave their heads.
Okay, this is if you haven't seen them, hold your thumb out to your face, turn it around so you see your fingerprint. And just, like, squint a little bit and imagine two eyes on it. That's what this guy looks like.
Yeah.
Bah, bah, bah.
But looks are clearly not the point. Like, the photo that they supplied for the magazine to use, they're, like, 50 miles away from the camera. Anyway, that's Midnight Oil.
I think it's unfair that every band has to talk about what do they think of NXS. That's rude.
Well,
that's rude.
It is rude. But it also is interesting to see, like, which ones are, like, good for them, and the other ones are, like, those dicks.
Yeah, well, some of them get to tour with them, and some of them don't.
Right.
Although I will say, the Peter Garrett did put his money where his mouth was. He became a politician. He got elected to office in some manner.
Yeah.
After Midnight Oil. So.
Well, how could he sleep?
He had a fire extinguisher. Bum, 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 now you sleep, Peter Garrett. Dun, 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 no more bad dreams for you. Bum, bum, bum.
Okay, Next, we have Paul Kelly and the Messengers, which is what they're called outside of Australia. In Australia, they're called Paul Kelly and the Colored Girls. Yikes! It's 1988. That's definitely not the term at that time. So, no. But under, I mean, who? I've never heard of them. But then under his visuals, she writes, not applicable. Like, there's a photo. I don't understand. That means he looks cute. I don't know.
Why not applicable? What is that even? Is it because like one of them looks like Henry Rollins?
One of them looks like Phil Collins.
One of them looks like Phil Collins. You got a Collins and a Rollins. And I can't do it. I can't roll with it.
Start the song!
They're about to. Oh. God.
Yeah.
Sometimes in this place.
Hey guys, one of these guys is named Dick Plug. that's the drummer, Richard Plug. And that's great. That's a name that if you wrote it, people would be like, you got to change that. We can't. No one wants to
write
Plug.
Sounds like the villain in a Clockwork Orange. This is The Church. Their album at this time is Starfish, which I got on cassette from Columbia House, probably because I recognized the name of them from Sassy. That song you just heard is Under the Milky Way.
P-L-O-O-G. It sounds like a Star Wars character from the cantina.
It does. That's it. There also there was a giveaway for this album in What Now also.
Yeah. I remember this song.
Yeah,
I remember
me too.
The church. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Ice House. They started as like a pub dance band that did covers of the Kinks and Lou Reed. And now they are, as Christina writes, one of the most commercially successful bands in Australia. Parenthetically adds, why does watered down, drippy music always make so much money? Like, is that a serious question? But then she also says, John Oates of Hall & Oates did some writing and singing on the new album, Man of Colors. Need I say more? Sideswiping John Oates. We're mad at him, too. He's a good pop writer.
These bands have so many people in them.
Yeah.
There's just so many people in these bands. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all I have to say about that.
You can have more people in your band when they don't have to worry about paying for health insurance.
Oh, boy.
Jeez, oh, boy. That was brought to you by Roy in the corner.
Is the implication here?
That is the music where Pee-wee Herman is trying to catch the train.
That is Big Pig of Breakaway fame.
You do need that.
Andy! Stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
That's Big Pig of Breakaway fame. There's a confusing orphan line under their photo and the rest of the story's on the next page. Don't do that. Just start on the next page. It's dumb. Mm-hmm. We already talked about them a couple of issues ago when their album was reviewed. She writes of their visuals that they all wear these like black backless aprons on stage. Like they look like blacksmith's aprons kind of. And in every one of the videos that I watched to get that clip, they do. They were really committed to that look, which I kind of admire. They look cool all together.
Don't they look like they're made to, like, you're at a Gallagher show?
Yeah.
I was going to say it looks like the Blue Man Group just before they put their makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except there's only three of them. And there's like 15 of people in Big Pig. They have three drummers. Come on now, guys. It's too much.
Wait, is a Blue Man Group only three people on stage? I thought it was like a gaggle of them.
No.
a whole parliament of blue folk.
I think it's only three, but I've never seen them, to be fair.
I don't know if only there three people can do everything the Blue Man Group needs to do.
There are four in the touring cast and six performers in each cast, and apparently about 35 blue men in the United States.
I apologize.
There are dozens of us. That is the music that plays when the cool kid who is making money throwing papers onto stoops back in 1982 movie plays at the start. So you know he's cool.
Okay.
Ooh, it's also, and then they do it again once they use those same papers to smuggle whatever the drugs are that they're putting in the papers.
Oh, it's a thriller. I thought it was just a little coming of age story, but it turned into a thriller.
No, I meant like the toy, you know, or Kidco, one of those where they'd have that young entrepreneur kid do something illegal. Never mind.
This is the Divinyls. We all know them from I Touch Myself, but that would not come out for another year and a half after this article was published. They're good. They look hot as hell in their photo.
Yeah. They made $8.38 while we were talking about them just now.
Joke's on you.
Yeah, that's right.
Next feature, our final feature of this issue, and pop culture-wise, is The Big Lies About China by Karen Cashpole. This is about China Phillips, who at this time had barely started out in her acting career. She was the lead in The Invisible Kid, which was reviewed a couple of issues ago, the female lead. Probably the one who he was, you know, sneaking into a room to spy on her while she was changing clothes or whatever. But she's the daughter of John Phillips and Michelle Phillips from The Mamas and the Papas, and would later go on to form Wilson Phillips. And they refer to it in this article, which is quite short, as the band that she's just in the process of forming. But at that time, they were called Naked Edge. Wilson Phillips, better name for sure. And they didn't sign their record deal until the year after this article, and Hold On came out the year after that in 1990. So she's more interesting as a person to look at now, and we'll link to a recent article about her from Page Six in January, because she's connected to a lot of people that have a lot of scandals. She ended up marrying Billy Baldwin, the second Baldwin. They are still married. So through that, she, like, Hailey Bieber is her niece, and she, you know, is connected to, like, Alec Baldwin and all that Ireland Baldwin stuff. Her half-sister Bijou is married to Danny Masterson, who is, like, currently in the middle of getting charged with rape that's been going on for a really long time. Obviously, Hilaria Baldwin is, you know, a continual going concern, and many years after this article, her sister Mackenzie Phillips published a memoir in which she said she had had a 10-year consensual sexual relationship with their father. So, like, she's been through it. So when you find out that she's now does a YouTube series called California Preachin', it's like, whatever makes you happy, because, wow, what a life. And that's it. She retired from acting after she married Billy Baldwin.
But she just made $4.38 because it split three ways while you talked about her.
And that's the issue. Next time, we're going to the cottage. We're wearing stripes. See what models looked like when they were young. Be a skateboarder or just dress like one. All of that and more in our Fashion Etc. issue next week. For my plug, I once again got to do a celebrity interview for Vanity Fair. This time I talked to Allison Janney about the end of the TV series Mom, and we will link that in the show notes in case you're wondering. She was delightful and wonderful.
He was born in this Middle Eastern country.
That I don't know. Pass.
USAQuizShow.com. You can follow me on Instagram at David T. Cole. You can follow Tara on Twitter or Instagram at Tara Ariano. And at Pamela Ribbon for Pam on Twitter and Insta. And of course, Listen to Sassy is the place to go on social for the podcast as a whole. Please rate and review us on the podcast app that you use. Give us 5 or 6 stars if you could wangle it. Wangle it? Oh, dear.
If anyone can wangle it, y'all can.
Oh, boy.
You can also call us. Our hotline is 720-SASSY-GO. Please leave us a voicemail about the show or the magazine, and we may play it on a future episode. You can find more information about the podcast, visual aids for all of our episodes, and contact info for us at listentosassy.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
1, 2, 3.
Da, da, da!
ElfQuest is a fantasy story about a community of elves and other fictional species who struggle to survive and coexist on a primitive Earth-like planet with 2 moons. Several published volumes of prose fiction also share the same setting.
I love the laziness of 2 moons.
2 moons!
It's not Earth. Look, there's 2 moons. Maybe one of them is cracked.
Pass.
Oh, yeah, they look kind of elfy. They got the ears. That's it. That's all you need. Make the ears pointy. Now they're elves. Elves with boobs and abs. My goodness. These elves are ripped. If that's what you're into, get on over to ElfQuest. It's ready for you. ElfQuest definitely influenced some people. Look at this. Wow. All right, I'm going to put ElfQuest on a shelf for later. Disney just bought ElfQuest. It's been canceled.
Moving on?
Yeah.
Yeah.